The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above Alto Forno Restaurant. If you'd like to swing by and schedule a free initial consultation, you want to actually somebody swung by, interestingly, this past week, just unannounced, showed up, walked up to the reception desk, walked up and saw Jody, and she says, "Hey, is Mark available?" Now, oftentimes I'm not, but it just so happened that that day I was. And I've met a very nice woman who listens to our show. She's been a regular listener to the show. And she was just driving by and she said, "You know, I think it's time for a change." And she was just interested in changing the relationship that she had with the financial advisor she had. And I had a few minutes to sit down and talk with her. And all we did, we just chatted for 10 or 15 minutes in my conference room. And here's what's kind of interesting. So you might think to yourself, well, isn't that nice that Mark just gets people walking in off the street that want to do business with him? Well, I'll tell you the end of the story first. The end of the story was I actually referred her to another financial advisor. And she was blown away that I would be so nice to tell her, "You know, you're not a good fit for our office, but let me refer you to somebody else who could really, really help you." And that's kind of what we've been doing at Friedman Financial for 50 years. In fact, I said to her, I said, "You know, 25 years ago, had you walked into my office, I would have taken you on as a client in a second. But fortunately, through the good fortunes of this community, from being a branded name all throughout the North Shore and the Merrimack Valley, for building a reputation that's really built from the accolades that many of you as clients and others have said to us, we've had to change the minimum standards that we have in our office to say we have to work with a certain number of people." And so I remember one time when the CEO of LPL Financial, his name was Todd Robinson. Todd had run LPL Financial from its inception and then took it public for a couple billion dollars back in, I believe it was like 2005. But I remember as Todd was going through some growing pains himself, he said to us, he says, "You know, as businesses grow, one of the things that a small business owner tries to do all the time is to treat everybody equally. And we all try to do that. But as your business grows, you realize you have to segment your business or make changes to your business." And most people will understand that, but you have to move from treating everybody equally to treating everybody fairly. And I kept on thinking to myself about Todd's reference to that as I was sitting with this woman in my conference room. She had worked with a financial advisor elsewhere who she had said had turned her over to a junior financial advisor 6 or 7 years ago. She loved her original advisor, but the original advisor, his practice had grown. And he referred her off to somebody else that was within their business. In fact, they were affiliated with a bank at the time. And as any business grows and any organization grows, you need to segment your business. And so there was a young advisor that was coming into play. And this person who had been with this advisor looked at, if you will, the bottom third of his business And he says, you know, maybe this new advisor, this ambitious, this young, energetic, enthusiastic advisor could really serve this bottom third of my client base with the passion, with the intensity, with the attention that they truly deserved. And she worked with this advisor for a number of years, this newer advisor. But over time, she began to realize that she wasn't getting the attention that she wanted. And so she thought, well, maybe I will look elsewhere. And she knew a lot about her investments, yet her situation was rather simple. She basically had $150,000 in an investment account, and she simply just wanted to move it to somebody else. And I explained to her that in our practice, our focus is on financial planning first, and it isn't just about picking up an investment account. It's about understanding where everything is in her financial life. And she says, well, my financial life is very simple. I collect a Social Security check, and I take the required minimum distribution from my $150,000 investment account. And she was 73 years old, and she just takes this distribution. So that $150,000 the distribution she has to take, I don't know, let's say it's around $6,000 or $7,000 a year that she gets. So she gets that plus her Social Security. And for her, that's enough. Very, very simple structure. And like I said, years ago, that would become just such a natural fit within my office. But as businesses grow, we have to adapt and change. And there are certain advisors that I know that thrive on that type of a client and can really serve them well. And so I referred her off to somebody else. And so that's what's really important. When you're thinking about, do I want to make a change with a financial advisor? Do I want to go and to test the waters a little bit, to learn more about the financial advisor? One of the things that you have to make sure that you understand is, who is this financial advisor's typical client? And when you go out looking for a financial advisor, maybe you're doing it yourself, or maybe you're working with somebody else. Perhaps you've actually not really done it yourself, but you've had most of your money in your 401k plan at work, or your corporate entity is really taking care of most of the financial structure of what you've done in your life. And now you may be approaching retirement and you have to make some important decisions, like, how do I take Social Security? What should I do with my 401k or my 403b? What pension options should I select? All of those different things. How should I handle health insurance? Well, one of the things that you want to do when you're seeking guidance from somebody, I would encourage you that before you explain your personal financial situation, before you explain what the overall net worth, the overall scope of what your financial life is about, is ask the financial advisor to describe their typical client, not their ideal client, because their ideal client might be something that might be really on the upper echelon of who they're serving. But who is their typical client? Tell me who fits in the bullseye of the people that you serve. If you will, it's if I were to take the 50%, that middle version from 40% to 60%, that group of people, who is that group of folks that you're serving? And ask the advisor to describe that. And if they're not describing anything that looks like you, do yourself a favor and don't try to make yourself fit into their situation. Because they can certainly try to accommodate you and try to sell you on why they fit today. But you have to ask yourself, if I'm going to build a relationship with a financial advisor, and it's going to be someone that I'm going to work with for the next 3, 5, and 15 years, is this the person who's going to, when it's time to focus on their best clients or the people that they really need to serve, am I going to be part of that group? Am I going to find myself being part of the situation where this woman that walked into my office was, where every 3 or 4 years she's going to get pushed off to somebody else because she doesn't make the top 2/3 of that advisor's book of business? It's real important to understand that, because when you're working with a financial advisor, my belief is that you want more than just a better investment strategy. You want advice. And that advice extends far beyond, did I pick the right investment? Look, I'll be the first one to tell you that when you work with a firm like ours, and yes, we manage a lot of money, close to $450 million that we manage for our clients. It's a lot of money. But do I tell my clients that I will get you a better return than everybody else? Absolutely not. I'd be lying to you if I told you that I could do that consistently. I think you're going to get average to better than average. But you know what you're also going to get along with that? Advice. You're going to understand why your account may have underperformed the market, or why it overperformed in certain areas. You'll understand why we suggest owning several different what are called asset classes. Money in large cap funds, small cap funds, international funds, bond funds, all different things. Why we avoid what are called alternative investments, hedge fund strategies, gold and precious metal type investment strategies, structured products, things like that, options, why we stay away from that, why we avoid cryptocurrency strategies. Look, if you're looking for action, if you're looking for where can I potentially get the best rate of return, knowing that there's also the possibility of losing money quickly, I am not the shop for you. Frankly, the people that do that on a regular basis oftentimes have very short-lived careers. They're good for a while because they were, frankly, lucky. And then if they get really good at it, it ultimately falls apart. I don't even know what happens if they really get good at it, because if they get really good at it, actually, you know what they do? They go work for a mutual fund company where they say, oh, instead of here's $2 million to manage, here's $6 billion. And you have the infrastructure of 80 or 100 people working for you. You got the support of a corporate entity and all of that other kind of stuff. Folks, I think those that listen to this show, that listen to Dollars and Cents here each and every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m., you simply want financial advice in a language you can understand. You know that you're an average person, maybe above average. We're typical New Englanders. We're humble, though. When we are Red Sox fans, we pound our chest a little bit, and Patriots fans, and we love our New England sports. But nevertheless, we understand that we have an obligation to take care of ourselves through the remainder of our lives. And we don't want to put too much risk to that. We also worry if we're in our 50s and 60s and 70s. While we want to take care of ourselves, we may also have to worry about our parents or our adult children and the time and energy and the money sometimes that it takes to make all of that happen. We have to be responsible adults. And one of the ways that you can be responsible as you get older and as you have to manage your own personal finances is that you can have control and flexibility with your money. One of the things I always advise people that you want to be very careful of are strategies that handcuff you. Now, you may say to yourself, well, I want to buy an investment so that I'm pressured, so that I take the pressure off me, that I don't or can't touch the money for a period of time. I think that's nice, but make sure that it's not all of your money that you're putting aside that you can't touch for a period of time. Make sure that it fits into everything. Look, we know we put money into our 401ks or our retirement plans knowing that we're not going to be able to touch that money until age 59 and a half or older. Well, that's fine. But once you hit retirement, if you start buying investment strategies that you place and then you can't touch the money for 7 or 10 years without significant penalties, if you don't have other resources to support what you can't touch, you could find yourself in trouble, and I never want to put you in that situation. Here at North Shore 104.9, we provide financial advice in a language you can understand. We do it each and every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m., and I call this show Dollars and Cents. There's a lot that I want to share with you today. We're going to be here for about an hour. I want to talk to you about a couple things. One is a story that appeared in MarketWatch that called 10 Questions to Ask Yourself Before You Buy or Sell a House. I think this is going to be critically important questions, especially in a world of rising interest rates. And the second thing I want to talk about before we get out of this show today is why you want to be very careful with how you invest your money in non-retirement mutual funds towards the end of this year. We'll talk about this when we get back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Hi, this is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Each week, I try to provide listeners with with financial advice in a language you can understand. And much of my advice comes from real-life situations that happens in my office, Friedman Financial, each and every day. You see, at Friedman Financial, we help individuals and families create smart strategies for spending money in retirement. Our approach is committed to placing your interests first. And best of all, Friedman Financial is independent, and we're a fee-based financial planning and investment management firm. We're absolutely committed to helping you get your financial house in order. When you're ready to get serious about your financial planning needs, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or on the web at FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
If I had a million dollars.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hope you're having a great Sunday. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm the president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. And we are here each and every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m., providing you with financial advice in a language you can understand. When I last left you, I told you about a story that I wanted to share about buying a house. And buying a house is one of those things that everybody has. They call it the American dream, wanting to own that house. And it has been, for the longest time, a seller's market. Buyers have been paying premium prices for homes. And I think that's about to change. It is really going to start happening, because what many people haven't realized is that interest rates are starting to creep up. You know, years ago, people were able to get a mortgage that was in the threes, sometimes even in the twos, believe it or not. But current interest rates right now on a 30-year mortgage are in the 4.5s to approaching 5. And chances are, folks, by the end of next year, they'll likely be close to 6. So what I wanted to give you a sense of is to how the cost of a mortgage is going to change, and what that will likely do to the eligibility of people who can buy homes and the folks that are selling their homes and the price that they have to put on that house. So here's the deal. Years ago, you know, when we went through our credit crisis in 2007, 2008, the banks had created this loan scheme that allowed people to be eligible for mortgages at rates that they certainly shouldn't have qualified for. And the banks learned their lessons from that, of course. As you well know, the market took its hit. The banks took their hit. We had what was called the credit crisis. In fact, there was a period of time when if you were making $70,000 a year as a household income, you could qualify for a $400,000 mortgage. That doesn't make any sense. That just seems insane. And so let's talk a little bit about mortgage planning and how you should start thinking about what you can afford. What you can afford. Here's the thought. People say, well, I need that pre-qualifying letter. Well, take a look at what your household income is. Let's say your household income is $100,000. If your household income is $20,000, you should look to see what take $28,000, take 28% or 30%. Let's take 30% as a number, though it should be 28%. 30% is $30,000. Divide 30,000 by 12, and you're going to come up with about $2,500 a month. $2,500 a month should be what your principal, interest, taxes, and insurance should be to qualify for this mortgage. And when you think about what is $2,500 a month going to buy me, what is $2,500 a month going to buy me, it's complicated. You have to run the numbers. And you have to say, okay, well, if you wanted to get a $500,000 mortgage, Now, I'm throwing a big number out there. It's going to be tough to do that at $2,500 a month. In fact, it's pretty tough to do it at a $300,000 mortgage. It was a lot easier a couple of years ago, and it's getting harder and harder these days. So let me give you some examples of what
costs are. I ran some numbers. The best way to do this, by the way, is go to a website that is called, and I've used this before, Dinkytown. Dinkytown. It's a free piece of software. That's a free web-based software where you can get any calculator you want, any possible calculator, to try to figure out the answers to mathematical questions. And so they have a loan calculator where you can put in, well, if I want my monthly payment to be $2,500, plus you have to add on what's the cost for insurance. Let's say it's $800 a month. Let's say the cost for, let's say the cost for taxes is $800 a month. The cost for insurance is another couple hundred dollars. So your $2,500 principal interest is more like $3,500 now that you have to pay. What kind of a mortgage would you qualify for? And it's pretty scary when you see what those numbers are. It used to be a lot easier. So let's just strip out the insurance part. Let's strip out the taxes part, just principal and interest. If you wanted a $300,000 mortgage today, in today's environment, you're paying roughly $1,500 a month. A $300,000 mortgage in today's interest rate environment of, say, 4.5%, you're going to pay roughly $1,500 a month as the principal and interest payment. Principal and interest plus the cost of taxes, and let's say that's another $500. I don't know. Just depends upon the house that you buy, of course. Let's say that's another $500. So that's $2,000 a month plus the cost of insurance, house insurance. Let's call that a couple other $100 a month. That's $2,200 a month. Now, $2,200 a month times 12, and I'm going to do this on my calculator here, $2,200 a month. I'm doing it as we speak here. 2,200 times 12 is $26,400. You divide that by 0.30, and you come up with $88,000. So if your household income is $88,000 or greater, you would qualify for that kind of a mortgage. But here's the problem. There are many people, and most folks are making more money than that as a household income. And they're believing that they can afford a much larger house than they can. And how many times have you been to a house? How many times have you been in somebody's house where it looks nice from the outside and you go inside and you realize, oh my God, they haven't furnished the house. It's empty. Or there's a lot of rooms that are empty. And they say to themselves, well, we're hoping to grow into the house, or we're saving up for this or for that. Folks, one of the things you got to be careful about when you're buying a house these days is if you're overbuying a house with the expectation that you'll grow into it or that you'll ultimately afford it, I want you to be very careful, because what happens if you have to sell it? What happens if you have to sell that house? When you have to sell, you become desperate, especially if you have to sell it right away. Maybe you got a promotion. Maybe you got a job where you have to relocate to another place. And what if interest rates are higher than what they were when you bought your house? Well, you know what that oftentimes means? It means that you have to lower the price of your house to accommodate what the buyers can afford to purchase your home. And we are going to find ourselves in that situation in the very near future. All of a sudden, this housing market is going to go from a seller's market to a buyer's market. Buyers are going to be able to put demands on lowering your price. You see, one of the things is people look at their homes as they say, well, they're just great investments. Actually, most people that have owned a house will say it is a money pit. But it's a place where you live. You don't buy your house for investment purposes. You buy your house because it's a place where you want to reside with your family, where you want to live, where you want to make it a home. There's very few people who can successfully buy homes and flip them for profits. Now, you want to do that for an investment purpose. Generally, you're not even living in the homes. You're buying a house, restoring the home, updating the home, and then flipping it over. But if you're going to settle into a home, I think you know that there's a lot of money that you lay out for the cost of a house. Buying a home is not a long-term successful investment. In fact, this is the other thing that happens. I think it's pretty funny, is I know many people that live like in the Rolling Hills area of Peabody. and they spent $49,900 for their house back in the 70s. And their house now, according to Zillow, says it's worth $500,000. And someone will come around and say, they're going to offer you $400,000 for your house, and you'll look at them like, what are you, nuts? I'm not taking $400,000 for my home. Wait a second, you paid $49,000 for the house. The marketplace says, Zillow, the marketplace, if you will, says it's worth $500,000. Yet, if you're not getting offers at $500,000, the marketplace sets the price. And I don't care how long you've lived there or how many memories you've had in the house, this is a business transaction. And business transactions occur when there is a buyer and a seller who can agree on an equal price. A buyer and a seller who can agree on an equal price. And that's what happens. And unfortunately, interest rates can oftentimes dictate where that equal price might land. That's a challenge. That's an issue for those that are selling and for those that are buying. If interest rates go up to 6%, if interest rates go up to 6%, a $300,000 mortgage is going to run you in principal and interest close to $1,800 a month. That's a $300 a month increase from what it was at 4.5%. So that means it's going to cost you $3,600 more a year. Maybe you can afford that. Maybe not. But most people aren't getting $300,000 mortgages these days. That's the problem. I'm seeing people getting $500,000 and $800,000 mortgages. You start putting the multiplier on that and it's huge. Did you know that a $500,000 mortgage at 6% is $3,000, not including principal and not including insurance, not including taxes? Are you prepared to spend $4,000 or up to $5,000 in housing costs every month? Certainly a young couple doesn't have the capacity in many cases to be able to do that without bankrupting everything else they have in their house. We have to be very careful. The banks have to be careful on who they're lending to, what the risks are that are involved, and you need to make sure that you have a really good handle on what it means to be living in a house that might be pushing you well beyond your means. It's scary. Buying a house is a big responsibility. When interest rates were low, we had room. We had room to wiggle. We had room to move. We had room to take chances. But as interest rates move up, and you think 6% is high, most people that are listening to this show saying, I remember when my mortgage was 12%. My first home that I bought, and I'm 52 years old, so when Laura and I got married in 1992, the first home that we bought, I think we paid, I want to say we paid $275 or $299.9 for a house in Stoneham. Our mortgage rate was 9.25%. That's what we were paying. So understand, mortgage rates can go up that high. And that wasn't that long ago, folks. Mortgage rates are more likely to go up than they will be to go down. So here's my other piece of advice to you when it comes to houses. If you have an adjustable rate mortgage, if you bought something that says, well, the mortgage rates are going to adjust every couple years, you may want to go back to your lender right now and say, can we fix this rate? Because if you're planning on staying in your house for an extended period of time, you're not going to be too happy with an adjustable rate mortgage or a mortgage that has a balloon payment in, say, 10 years or 20 years, because that interest rate could jump up very quickly. If you think you'll be in your house for, let's say, 3 years or less, maybe the adjustable rate mortgage makes sense. I would even say 2 years or less. But if you're thinking of getting out, I mean, if you're thinking of staying in your home and you think the adjustable rate mortgage continues to be the way to go, I would really encourage you to pull out the pencil and crunch some numbers, because that may not be in your very best interest. Imagine this. What if you lost your job? There are a lot of people that are out there these days that are getting paid a lot more money than some might believe they're worth. Now, you might believe you're worth that amount, but when the company starts to go through a challenging period of time and they need to lay people off or cut back on salaries, And you're saying, well, I can't afford a cut back in salary. I got to keep paying my mortgage. And if your mortgage keeps going up, that makes it even tougher. You want to give yourself flexibility. That's important. That's what you need to do. That's called financial advice in a language you can understand. And it's what we do here each and every Sunday from 8 to 9 a.m. Been doing it for almost, well, actually for more than 50 years now. In April of this past year, we celebrated our 50th anniversary. And we continue to serve the North Shore and the Merrimack Valley community with providing financial advice in a language you can understand, but doing it also through the lens of financial planning. And what I mean by that is that it's not just about creating the best investment strategy. Yeah, we're going to give you a great investment strategy, something that works and aligns with what you need. But our advice is going to incorporate everything in your financial life. It's going to incorporate, what taxes do you have withheld from your pay stub? Why do you get a big refund? Or why do you have to owe taxes at the end of the year? Understanding why. Where is the best place to draw money from when it's time to take an income or take money that you need? You know, it's something that we see more often than not. You know, for years, I know you, like everybody else, we all heard about the importance of saving for a rainy day, investing for the future, putting money in our 401k, dollar cost averaging. We heard all of these great terms. And then all of a sudden, life caught up and we're now in our 60s and our 70s. And we realized, wait a second, the paycheck is about to stop or has just stopped. And now it's up to us to turn what we've accumulated into a paycheck. And man, is that a little daunting. Now, you're going to get your Social Security check or your pension or whatever it is that you might get. And very few people are getting pensions these days. I'm not worried about, if you're getting Social Security, I'm not worried about you running out of money or the Social Security stopping to pay you Social Security. I am not worried about that in the least bit for you. For our kids, that's a whole other story, probably a whole new program or an adaptation of the current Social Security program. But you need not worry that Social Security will stop coming to your mailbox, no matter how much the press seems to threaten that or our politicians seem to suggest it or that they're going to take Medicare away from. Are you kidding me? That is, it's junk. You're going to get your money. Plan on it. The biggest part is, will you plan appropriately for the other money that you've accumulated? Because that one, my friends, is on you. You have to be careful, but you also don't want to sacrifice your retirement so that you leave a fortune to the next generation who, I assure you, will blow it. Not all of them will blow it, of course not, because we've been doing this for so long. We average one death a month in our office. One death a month, which means that we watch how children, beneficiaries of clients, take what the clients had thought the kids would handle with care, with reckless abandon. They may take their money. Imagine leaving your child $200,000 in your IRA. And you'd say to yourself, well, I would never cash out $200,000 because think of all the taxes I'd have to pay. But if your child was just told that they've just inherited $200,000 in an IRA, and they find out that, well, wait a second, if I just paid the taxes, maybe I could walk away with $125,000 with no taxes. It's still not such a bad thing. I'll take the $125,000. I see this happen. I've told you stories on this radio station many times where I've seen families and children of families handle inheritances improperly. Part of what we talk about as financial planners in our conversations with you is making sure that we're having an open dialogue with you so that you understand how money would be passed on to the next generation and, if possible, including your children in the conversation so that they're clear as to what would happen and what your goals and objectives might be. But one of the big assets that nobody ever thinks about is the house. Many people think about, well, I maybe have accumulated $500,000, $1 million, $2 million in investable assets, both within my IRA, my investment accounts, my money in the bank and all that stuff. And you think about, well, that's going to be left to the kids. We want to work off living off the principal, perhaps. Some people talk about that. But you forget about what your house is worth. Well, chances are your kids don't want your house. And I tell you what they definitely don't want is the stuff inside. They don't care about the nice dining room set, the Chesterfield dining room set or the Chesterfield bedroom set that you bought. They don't want your Hummels. They don't want your silver. They don't want your crystal. They don't want your porcelain dolls. They don't want your wrought iron statues. They don't want anything. They want simple. They want new. They want clean. That's what they want. They're going to sell that stuff for a song and, frankly, probably just give it to 1-800-GOT-JUNK and let them figure it out. But they're also going to inherit a house. And what's interesting is last week we talked about people that tend to move the ownership of a house from their name into the names of their children. And we talked about why that can be a mistake. But what happens when you die and your kids inherit your house? Let's say you own it and the kids inherit it. Well, let's say you paid, like I used in my earlier example, $49,900 for a house in Rolling Hills and Peabody. And today the house is worth $500,000. When the kids inherit it, what tax do they pay on the house? If the kids inherit it, you know what they pay? Next to nothing. Because they receive it at what's called a step up in basis. Someone puts a market value on the house at the date of your death. And maybe you use Zillow, maybe you use an appraiser, maybe whatever it is. And let's say that house was worth $500,000. And if the kids sell the house for $500,000, there's no gain there, is there? The kids just get the house clean and they can split the money. Now they get the house. What do they get for the contents? Well, whatever the kids wanted to sell that for or whatever. I assure you it'll be worth a lot less than what you thought those contents were worth. So one of the things I oftentimes talk to people about are these folks that like to collect things, whether it's Beanie Babies or guns or art or trophies. Or we had a client that lived in Atlanta, Georgia, who collected. He was a hunter, and his house was filled with heads of animals and birds or fowl, whatever you want to call it, that all over his house. And he also had a gun collection that he thought was incredibly valuable. Well, he said that would be just in the event that the stock market crashed, he knew that he'd have value in his guns and his heads of whatever. Now, fortunately, the market didn't crash. And he's doing just fine financially. But I will assure you, when he does pass away, that stuff's not going to be worth very much. It's all in your head. It amazes me. Unless you have something that is truly something that, Lloyd's of London or something is going to want to auction off for something of significance, forget it. Remember all those baseball cards we collected? I mean, I collected baseball cards. Oh, imagine how much money this thing's worth. You know, the card might be worth 11 cents. And someone says, well, you know, you could get $40 for this thing. Big deal. Big deal. Is that worth trying to keep the corners and creases nice? I don't think you're going to get $40. Whatever. My point is that the value of your home is something that is likely to transition to your kids. The value, the selling price of the house is what they'll get. They'll get whatever that is, whatever it's sold, and they'll probably get that at that value and split it up. But the stuff that's inside, all the contents, if you think that stuff holds value, I would encourage you as you get older to get the value that you think you could get for it, because when the time comes to push it all out the door and bring it to the end of the driveway at a yard sale, your kids will take nickels on the dollar for stuff that you thought was valuable. But this was grandma's wine cup that she drank back in the 1800s, and it's going. And if it broke, it broke. But there's a few things that I wanted to tell you about, these questions to ask yourself before you buy or sell a house. It appeared in Market Watch. I told you earlier in my earlier segment about asking yourself the question, does it make sense to buy and when's the right time to buy? Well, buying's going to become a buyer's market, I believe, in the next year or two. What you see for prices for houses right now, I think those prices are coming down. However, if you're planning on buying a house with a mortgage, you may end up buying the same house. It just might the mortgage cost might be a little bit higher, but you'll end up buying the same house. It's the weirdest thing that's going on right now. As interest rates move up, sellers can appreciate their price because they know that you have the ability to afford a larger house. But if interest rates go up, that means sellers have to reduce their price so that you can meet the cost of the mortgage. So essentially, it's going to cost you the same one way or the other. And I just want you to be careful. I want you to be careful because I want you to be able to buy the house that you want. But when it's time to buy that house, make sure that you're buying the right house. People are going to be saying, well, I want to buy a house that we can grow in. I want to buy a house that we can move into that allows us to really expand. Well, make sure that you have the financial capacity to do so. One of the things that you also want to make sure of if you're looking to buy a house is you want to check your credit scores. Don't be surprised. Let's see, if you already have an automobile loan. Let's say you have a school loan. Let's say you have credit card debt. If you want a mortgage too, all that's going to be added into the collective debt that you have that's associated to your against your income. You want to be very careful about that. You may not qualify for the mortgage you think you're going to qualify, because if you look exclusively at your income, like earlier in the show, I said, well, figure 28 to 30% of your gross income should be the maximum amount that you're spending over the course of a year for principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And you might say, well, if I'm making $100,000, that 30% of that number is $30,000 or $2,500 a month. $2,500 a month should be my principal, interest, mortgage, and tax. I mean, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. However, if you also have a student loan, if you also have credit card debt, all that's going to add in there too. You have to figure that stuff out. You got to make sure when you're looking at a house to say, if I want to buy these McMansion type houses, how many rooms am I really, really going to use? And just because you might have the nicest house on the street, or you think you have the appearance of the nicest house on the street, make sure that you're buying the right number of rooms for what you need, not what will be appealing to your friends, parents, neighbors, relatives. Buy what works for you, because once you own it, you got to heat it. You got to cool it. You have to furnish it. You have to paint it. You have to keep it up. And are you willing to do that? Do you have the resources to do it? Because doing all of that stuff, you know what that takes? Money. And if you've stretched yourself out so far for the mortgage, interest, taxes, and insurance, and don't have enough money to pay the expanded electric bill or the expanded heat bill or the replacement costs to replace the roof or paint the house, and you say, well, I'll just get an equity loan for that. Well, now you're creating an even bigger problem. And I'll tell you this, equity loan rates aren't staying low either. They're going up. We have to be very careful. If you're going to start using debt to finance some of your living arrangements, make sure that it is within the scope of what you can afford. If you need the help, talk to a banker, talk to a loan officer, talk to a certified financial planner, talk to an accountant. You need to do this, and it's not just about the pre-approval letter. You can get a pre-approval letter, but understand what the impact of being pre-approved for that amount really means to your financial life. That, my friends, is financial advice in a language you can understand. We do it here each and every Sunday from 8 to 9 a.m. If you like this type of advice, I provide it each and every Friday through my newsletter. It's called Planning Pointers. It comes out each and every Friday morning at 10:30. All you need to go to my website, FriedmanFinancial.com. At the bottom of the website, that's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go to the bottom of the website. You can put in your email address, your name. You can tell us how you hear the show. If you want to throw out a comment to us, you do that. We'll get you on our newsletter, and it'll land in your email inbox next Friday. We got to take a quick break. When we get back, I want to tell you a story about why you may want to be very, very, very careful about investing in non-retirement mutual funds in the next 8 weeks. And it has nothing to do with the fact that the stock market is volatile. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
What if you could blend the classic strategies of investing with a contemporary approach to financial planning? That's what Friedman Financial can do for you. Wherever you are along your financial journey, Friedman Financial has the skills, technology, and expertise to help you make smart financial decisions. Their team of certified financial planners will deliver an independent, objective, personalized plan for you. Let's make 2018 the year you get serious about your financial plan. Friedman Financial. Financial advice in a language you can understand.
Securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Money. Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. We're in our last and final segment of Dollars and Cents this week, where we provide financial advice in a language you can understand each and every Sunday from 8 to 9 a.m. right here in the studios of North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, and we've been providing this show to our listeners here on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the surrounding community for, I guess, 5 or 6 years here at the station. Might be 6 years now. We've been providing financial advice in a language you can understand to individuals and families through our office in Peabody for 50 years, 50 years. It's really amazing that we've met so many families, we've served so many generations of families, and continue to provide this simple advice, this financial planning-driven, focused advice that people truly want. It's more than just an investment strategy. You're not coming to us to say, you know, Mark, how do I invest my $100,000 that I just inherited? No, this is not what that's about. Our approach is making sure that you understand where everything is and what everything is worth before you ever make an investment decision. And what's even more important is that after you've made the investment decisions, are you going back and looking at the total plan that was crafted to say, how do these investments, how does my payroll, how does my Social Security check, how do my expenses, how do they all fit into our plan moving forward in year 2, in year 5, in year 10, in year 20? You're able to see that. I'm able to show that to you, for those, at least for those clients that work in our office, work with us in our office. If you'd like to schedule an appointment, if now's the time for you to get serious about really doing financial planning and investment management advice, if now's the time for you to say, you know what, we've been dealing with so many people. I've got relationships with a broker, with an advisor, with an insurance agent, with everybody. But it's time to get serious. I need to consolidate all this stuff, simplify my life so I can truly enjoy retirement. That's the time to call us. 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. We are not in the office today, but you can certainly leave a message at on the phone. We will call you back. We'll schedule a free initial consultation for you, or perhaps just send you some information that you might like. If you'd also like to communicate with me directly, here is my personal email address, Mark, M-A-R-C, at FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com. And finally, of course, if you'd like to sign up for our free weekly newsletter, comes out each and every Friday at 10:30 in the morning, go to my website, FriedmanFinancial.com. I'll say the website again, Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com. Go to the bottom of any page on the website. Put your name in there, put in your email address. You'll get signed up for our newsletter. I hope you'll enjoy it. I think you really, really will. It provides you with financial advice in a language you can understand. I do not use this newsletter as a tool for trying to prospect people or calling you or anything like that. It's just information. I want you to know that when the time is right, when it's time to get serious about your financial planning and investment management needs, we are here for you when you're ready, not when we think you might be ready. No, when you're ready. So give us a call. We'll send out the information. Anyways, we're approaching the last couple months of the year, fourth quarter of this year. And as you well know, that October has been a rather volatile month, certainly in the stock market. October's generally a volatile month. I mean, that happens most months, but I'm not too concerned about that. Not in the least bit, to tell you the truth. As long as you have a well-balanced portfolio, as long as you are using asset allocation as your strategy. Look, if you're trying to pick and choose what stocks, what industries, what sectors to get into, I'll tell you the same thing that I told people 6 or 7 years ago when I started doing this radio show. You're a fool. It's that simple. Don't play that game. No one does it successfully. You won't do it continuously successfully. Use packaged products. Rely on mutual funds. Rely on exchange-traded funds, index funds, things that have a strategy where there is professional money management. You have diversification. You have daily pricing and daily liquidity. Now, there is no guarantee, of course, about what the performance will be in a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund. Nothing at all that's guaranteed. But I'd like to think that if you owned 200 stocks within a portfolio that is managed by a professional, you are far more likely to see minimized volatility if you simply owned one stock or two stocks that you're picking on your own and you're deciding when to sell or buy them. If you were given the choice to say, you can pick one stock in the world that you want to buy, and you have $10,000 to invest, and you do all the research you want, and you pick that one stock. And then you also say to yourself, well, you also have $10,000 that you could give to a mutual fund manager who would buy a fund that includes that one stock, but probably also has 200 other stocks in the portfolio. Which are you more likely to find success in? I don't know that you'd know the answer to that now, but I would bet that if your stock that you bought individually soars, you're not likely to have any type of a discipline to sell it, because you'll say, oh my God, look how much higher it could go. And if it falls, you go, oh, this stock is junk. I'm getting rid of this. What a mutual fund manager has, what a mutual fund manager does is he has guardrails. He has constraints on when this stock hits this price point or this level, we're going to sell all of it, a certain percent. When it drops to this level, we're going to sell or buy or whatever it is. They have a strategy that is not emotionally driven, but structurally and soundly driven for building a portfolio. But mutual funds can create a problem when markets get volatile. And this is why I'm suggesting that you be very careful about investing money in certainly stock-based mutual funds towards the end of this year. Now, I'm not saying that they're bad to invest in. I just said you need to be careful upon your selection. Every year around this time, I talk about something that's called a capital gain distribution. What happens, if you understand how a mutual fund works, and most people don't, but the portfolio manager who might have stocks in their portfolio, let's say there's 200 of them, over the course of the year, they might buy and sell stocks. So let's say you bought Coca-Cola at $20 a share and you sold it at $30 a share. Just using that purely as an example, you just had a $10 profit, right? Well, does the portfolio manager of the mutual fund pay a capital gains tax on that? Heck no. They don't have to do that. But what they do have to do is they have to designate that $10 profit and put it into a separate bucket within the mutual fund and hold it there. And that $10 is still incorporated into the price of your mutual fund over the course of the year, but it accumulates all of the realized gains, all of the realized losses, such that if you look at your mutual fund and you say, oh, it's selling for $20 a share, that $20 share price might have built into it, let's say $2 in the capital gains that the manager has already realized over the course of the year. And at the end of the year, by law, they have to pay out whatever gains exist. And so that $2 a share gets paid out in December, and you may say, well, what, great, I'm getting a bonus. I'm going to get a $2 bonus, $2 on that $20. Well, you might think that's the case, but that's not the case. You might get $2, but your share price just dropped to $18 because they just had to clean out what was in the bucket. Now, this happens, and it's a taxable event if you own this in a non-retirement investment. If it's in a retirement account, if it's in an IRA, a 401k, 403b, an annuity, any type of retirement or tax-deferred investment, you don't have to worry about that. But if you own this personally, it is subject to tax. And you've probably seen this on your 1099s if you've received them in the past. You see the 1099 that you get. It says qualified dividends, ordinary dividends, and then there's a line that says capital gain distributions. And sometimes that number can be large and sometimes it can be small. But what we do know is that you can actually plan and understand what that distribution might be before you invest. Imagine this. Imagine if in the example that I just showed you, the mutual fund was scheduled to pay a $2 capital gain distribution. And it was going to do that on December 15th. And you knew that what was really going to happen was on the 15th, your share price was going to drop to $18, but you're going to get a $2 dividend. It's all a wash, right? But that $2 dividend would be taxable. Imagine if you decided to buy that mutual fund on December 14th. Brand new money. You invested on December 14th, $100,000. And you realize now that 10% of your investment, that $2 a share, 10%, just became subject to tax. How'd you like to learn that you invested $10,000, yet $10,000 of that $100,000 that you just put into the investment is subject to tax? I bet you wouldn't be very happy about that. Now, here's the challenge. Do you plan for it? Do you know about it? Are you ready for it? Now, in my office, we start doing this in October. We start planning appropriately to see, okay, should we keep our clients' money invested to accept the capital gain distribution, or perhaps sell out of the fund beforehand because maybe their gain or their loss is less than what the capital gain distribution might be? It's a game we have to play. We have to figure that stuff out. It's confusing. It's but it's important because I'm trying to save you tax money. I'm trying so desperately to do that. And so what we do, as like I said, we start in early October looking to see when those are going to happen. Well, there's a website that I go to and I talk about it every year here on the radio. It's called Caps Gain Valet, CAPSGAIN Valet, VALET.com. And if you go to that website, you don't have to sign up for the subscription service or anything like that. What I would encourage you to do is go to the button that says articles. And each year they put together an article that's called In the Doghouse. And the In the Doghouse early release has just come out, dated October 19th, from Cap Gains Valet. There is a mutual fund, and unfortunately I can't say the name of the mutual fund over the radio, but if you go to Cap Gains Valet and search under articles and look at In the Doghouse, you're going to find that there is one mutual fund that is going to pay out 70% of their investment in a capital gain distribution, which means that if they're going to pay their capital gain distribution on December 1st and you bought this mutual fund on November 30th, let's say you put $100,000 into this mutual fund, on December 1st, they are going to pay out a 70% capital gain distribution, which means that 70% of your investment, if you invested $100,000, $70,000 of your investment is about to become taxable. And you will owe close to, I don't know, $20,000, $25,000 in taxes just because you invested on the wrong day. Do you think it's worth taking a look before you invest in mutual funds in November and December, especially if you're investing in non-retirement mutual funds? I think so. Now, there are many mutual funds that are out there that may not pay a capital gain distribution, or they may pay a small one, or maybe it makes sense to invest in it. All I'm asking you to do is to be smart about it. And how do you become smart about it? Well, you can use this website, capgainsvalet.com. You can work with your financial advisor. You can trust in your financial advisor to communicate that with you effectively. But if you work with a financial advisor and these cap gain distributions come to you as a surprise, you might say, what am I paying for? Think it through. I'm trying to give you financial advice in a language you can understand. I'm trying to give you ample time to prepare because the end of the year is drawing near. And I want to be sure that you're ready. I want to be sure that you've got your financial plan in order. I want to be sure that your retirement strategies are lined up properly for the end of this year. We got a brand new tax plan that we're going to have to deal with. That's all going to be new this year. Lots of things to think about. Lots more financial advice in a language that you can understand coming your way each and every Sunday. But I got to get out of here. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you.
Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.